Bereft of all further excuses, Magrat struck out in sheer desperation. "But I don't know how to behave at balls." Granny Weatherwax had to admit that she didn't either. She raised her eyebrows at Nanny.
"You used to go dancing when you were young," she said.
"Well," said Nanny Ogg, social tutor, "what you do is you tap men with your fan. Got your fan? And say things like, 'La, sir.' It helps to giggle, too. And flutter your eyelashes a bit. And pout." "How am I supposed to pout?" Nanny Ogg demonstrated. "Oh, yuck."
"Don't worry," said Granny. "We'll be there, too."
"And that's supposed to make me feel better, is it?" Nanny reached behind Magrat and grabbed Granny's shoulder. Her lips formed the words, "Won't work, she's all to pieces, no confidence." Granny nodded. "Perhaps I ought to do it," said Nanny in a loud voice. "I'm experienced at balls. I bet if I wore my hair long and wore the musk and them shiny shoes, and we hemmed up the dress a foot, no one would know the difference. What do you say?" Magrat was so overawed by the sheer fascinating picture of this that she obeyed unthinkingly when Granny Weatherwax said,
"Look at me, Magrat Garlic."
The pumpkin coach entered the palace drive at high speed, scattering horses and pedestrians, and braked by the steps in a shower of gravel.
"That was fun," said Gribo, and then lost interest.
A couple of flunkies bustled forward to open the door, and were nearly thrown back by the sheer force of the arrogance that emanated from within.
"Hurry up, peasants!" Magrat swept out, pushing the majordomo away. She gathered up her skirts and ran up the red carpet. At the top, a footman was unwise enough to ask for her ticket.
"You impertinent lackey!"
The footman, recognizing instantly the boundless bad manners of the well-bred, backed away quickly. Down by the coach, Nanny Ogg said, "You don't think you might have overdone it a little bit?"
"I had to," said Granny. "You know what she's like."
"How are we going to get in? We ain't got tickets, and we ain't dressed properly either."
"Get the broomsticks down off the rack," said Granny. "We're going straight to the top."
They touched down on the battlements of a tower overlooking the palace grounds. The strains of courtly music drifted up from below, and there was the occasional pop and flare of fireworks from the river. Granny opened a likely-looking door in the tower and descended the circular stairs which led to a landing.
"Posh carpet on the floor," said Nanny. "Why is it on the walls, too?"
"Them's tapestries," said Granny.
"Cure," said Nanny. "You live and learn."
"Well, I do, anyway."
Granny stopped with her hands on a doorknob.
"What do you mean by that?" she said.
"Well, I never knew you had a sister."
"We never talked about her."
"It's a shame when families break up like that," said Nanny.
"Eh? You said your sister Beryl was a greedy ingrate with the conscience of an oyster."
"Well, yes, for she is my sister."
Granny opened the door.
"Well, well," she said. "What's up? What's up? Don't just stand there."
Nanny peered around her and into the room.
"Cool,"
she said. Magrat paused in the big red velvet anteroom. Strange thoughts fireworked around her head. She hadn't felt like this since the herbal wine. But struggling among them like a tiny prosaic potato in a spray of psychedelic chrysanthemums was an inner voice screaming that she didn't even know how to dance, apart from in circles. But it couldn't be difficult if ordinary people managed it. The tiny inner Magrat, struggling to keep its balance on the surge of an arrogant self-confidence, wondered if this was how Granny Weatherwax felt all the time. She raised the hem of her dress slightly and looked down at her shoes. They couldn't be real glass, or else she'd be hobbling towards some emergency first aid by now. Nor were they transparent. The human foot is a useful organ, but is not, except to some people with highly specialized interests, particularly attractive to look at. The shoes were mirrors. Dozens of facets caught in the light. Two mirrors on her feet. Magrat vaguely recalled something about a witch never getting caught between two mirrors, wasn't it? Or was it never trust a man with orange eyebrows? Something she'd been taught back when she'd been an ordinary person. Something like, a witch should never stand between two mirrors because the person that walked away might not be the same person. Or something. Like you were spread out among the images, your whole soul was pulled out thin, and somewhere in the distant images a dark part of you would get out and come looking for you, if you weren't very careful, or something. She overruled the thought. It didn't matter. she stepped forward to where a little knot of other guests were waiting to make their entrance.
"Lord Henry Gleet and Lady Gleet."
The ballroom wasn't a room at all, but a courtyard open to the soft night airs. Steps led down into it. At the far end, another much wider staircase, lined with flickering torches, led up into the palace itself. On the far wall, huge and easily visible, was a clock.
"The Honourable Douglas Incessant."
The time was 7:45. Magrat had a vague recollection of some old woman shouting something about the time, but that didn't matter either.
"Lady Volantia d'Arrangement."
She reached the top of the stairs. The butler, who was announcing the arrivals, looked her up and down, and then, in the manner of one who had been coached carefully all afternoon for this very moment, bellowed,
"Mysterious and beautiful stranger!"
Silence spread out from the bottom of the steps like spilled paint. 500 heads turned to look at Magrat. A day before, even the mere thought of having 500 people staring at her would have melted Magrat like butter in a furnace. But now she stared back, smiled, and raised her chin haughtily. Her fan snapped open like a gunshot. The mysterious and beautiful stranger, daughter of Simplicity Garlic, granddaughter of Araminta Garlic, her self-possession churning so strongly that it was crystallizing out on the sides of her personality, stepped out. A moment later, another guest stalked past the butler. The butler hesitated. Something about the figure worried him. It kept going in and out of focus. He wasn't entirely certain if there was anyone else there at all. Then his common sense, which had temporarily gone and hidden behind something, took over. After all, it was Samedi Nuit Mort. People were supposed to dress up and look weird. You were allowed to see people like that.
Excuse me, sir, he said. Who shall I say it is?
I'm here incognito.
The butler was sure nothing had been said, but he was also certain that he had heard the words.
Fine, he mumbled.
Go on in, then.
He brightened.
Damn good mask, sir.
He watched the dark figure walk down the steps and leaned against a pillar. Well, that was about it. He pulled a handkerchief out from his pocket, removed his powdered wig, and wiped his brow. He felt as though he'd just had a narrow escape, and what was even worse was that he didn't know from what. He looked cautiously around and then sidled into the anteroom and took up a position behind a velvet curtain where he could enjoy a quiet roll-up. He nearly swallowed it when another figure loped silently up the red carpet. It was dressed like a pirate that had just raided a ship, carrying black leather goods for the discerning customer. One eye had a patch over it, the other gleamed like a malevolent emerald, and no one that big ought to be able to walk that quietly. The butler stuck the dog end behind his ear.
"Excuse me, my lord," he said, running after the man and touching him firmly yet respectfully on the arm. "I shall need to see your ticket,
The man transferred his gaze to the hand on his arm. The butler let go hurriedly.
"Row! Your ticket."
The man opened his mouth and hissed.
"Of course," said the butler,
backing away with the efficient speed of someone who certainly isn't being paid enough to face a needle-toothed maniac in black leather.
"I expect you're one of the Duke's friends, yes?"
"Row!
No problem, no problem, but Sir has forgotten Sir's mask."
"Row!"
The butler waved frantically to a side table piled high with masks.
"The Duke requested that everyone here is masked," said the butler. "I wonder if Sir would find something here to his liking?"
There's always a few of them, he thought to himself. It says mask in big curly letters on the invite, in gold yet. But there's always a few buggers who thinks it means it's from someone called Maskew. This one was quite likely looting towns when he should have been learning to read. The greasy man stared at the masks. All the good ones had been taken by earlier arrivals, but that didn't seem to dismay him. He pointed.
"Want that one," he said.
Very good choice, my lord.
Allow me to help you on..."
The man glared at him, then dropped the mask over his head and squinted out through an eye-hole at a mirror. "Damn odd," the butler thought. "I mean, it's not the kind of mask the men choose. They go for skulls and birds and bulls and stuff like that. Not cats." The odd thing was that the mask had just been a pretty ginger cat head when it was on the table. On its wearer, it was still a cat head, only a lot more so, and somehow slightly more feline and a lot nastier than it should have been.
"Always wanted to be ginger," said the man.
"Hon you, it looks good, sir," trilled the butler.
The cat-headed man turned his head this way and that, clearly in love with what he was seeing. Gribo yowled softly and happily to himself and ambled into the ball. He wanted something to eat, someone to fight, and then, well, he'd have to see. For wolves and pigs and bears, thinking that they're human is a tragedy. For a cat, it's an experience. Besides, this new shape was a lot more fun. No one had thrown an old boot at him for over 10 minutes. The two witches looked around the room.
"Odd," said Nanny Ogg. "Not what I'd expect in, you know, a royal bedroom."
"Is it a royal bedroom?"
"There's a crown on the door."
"Oh." Granny looked around at the decor.
"What do you know about royal bedrooms?" she said, more or less for something to say. "You've never been in a royal bedroom."
"I might have been," said Nanny.
"You never have."
"Remember young Verence's coronation? We all got invited to the palace," said Nanny. "When I went to have to powder me nose, I saw the door open, so I went in and had a bit of a bounce up and down."
"What was it like?"
"Very comfy. Young Magrat doesn't know what she's missing. And it was a lot better than this, I don't mind saying," said Nanny. The basic colour was green. Green walls, green floor. There was a wardrobe and a bedside table, even a bedside rug, which was green. The light filtered in through a window filled with greenish glass.
"Like being at the bottom of a pond," said Granny. She swatted something. "And there's flies everywhere."
She paused, as if thinking very hard, and said,
"A duck pond," said Nanny. There were flies everywhere. They buzzed on the window and zigzagged aimlessly back and forth across the ceiling. "Duck pond," Nanny repeated, because people who make that kind of joke never let well alone. "Like duck."
"I heard," said Granny.
She flailed at a fat blue bottle.
"Anyway, you'd think there wouldn't be flies in a royal bedroom," muttered Nanny.
"You'd think there'd be a bed, in fact," said Granny.
Which there wasn't. What there was instead, and what was preying somewhat on their minds, was a big, round, wooden cover on the floor. It was about 6 feet across. There were convenient handles. They walked around it. Flies rose up and hummed away.
"I'm thinking of a story," said Granny.
"Me too," said Nanny Ogg, her tone slightly shriller than usual. "There was this girl who married this man, and he said you can go anywhere you like in the palace, but you mustn't open that door, and she did, and she found he murdered all his other—"
Her voice trailed off. Granny was staring hard at the cover and scratching her chin.
"Put it like this," said Nanny, trying to be reasonable against all odds. "What could we possibly find under there that's worse than we could imagine?"
They each took a handle. 5 minutes later, Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg stepped outside the duck's bedroom. Granny closed the door very quietly.
"Caw," said Nanny, her face still pale.
"Yes," said Granny, "stories.
I'd heard about, you know, people like him, but I never believed it. Yuck! I wonder what he looks like."
"You can't tell just by looking," said Granny.
"It explains the flies, at any rate," said Nanny Ogg.
She raised a hand to her mouth in horror.
"And our Magrat's down there with him," she said. "And you know what's going to happen? They're going to meet one another, and—"
"But there's hundreds of other people," said Granny. "It's hardly what you'd call intimate."
"Yes, but even the thought of him, you know, even touching her, I mean, it'd be like holding her—"
"Does Ella count as a princess, do you think?" said Granny.
"What? Oh, yeah, probably. For foreign parts. Why?"
"Then that means there's more than one story here. Lily's letting several happen all at the same time," said Granny. "Think about it. It's not touching that's the trick. It's kissing."
"We've got to get down there," said Nanny. "We've got to stop it. I mean, you know me, I'm no prude, but look."
"I say, old woman."
They turned. A small fat woman in a red dress and a towering white wig was peering haughtily at them from behind a fox mask.
"'Yes?'
snapped Granny.
"'Yes, my lady,' said the fat woman. "'Where are your manners? "'I demand that you direct me to the powder room this instant. "'And what do you think you're doing?'
"'This was to Nanny Ogg, who was walking around her "'and staring critically at her dress. "'You're a 20, maybe a 22,' said Nanny.
"'What? What is this impertinence?'
Nanny Ogg rubbed her chin thoughtfully. "'Well, I don't know,' she said. "'Red in a dress has never been me. "'You haven't got anything in blue, have you?' The choleric woman turned to strike Nanny with her fan, but a skinny hand tapped her on the shoulder. As she passed out dreamily, she was aware of a voice a long way off, saying, "'Well, that's me fitted, but she's never a size 20, and if I had a face like that, I'd never wear red.' Lady Valentia d'Arrangement relaxed in the inner sanctum of the ladies' restroom. She removed her mask and fished an errant beauty spot from the depths of her décolletage. Then she reached around and down to try and adjust her bustle, an exercise guaranteed to produce the most ridiculous female gymnastics on every world except those where the panty girdle had been invented. Apart from being as well adapted a parasite as the oak bracket fungus, Lady Valentia d'Arrangement was by and large a blameless sort of person. She always attended events for the better class of charity, and made a point of knowing the first names of nearly all her servants, the cleaner ones at least. And she was on the whole kind to animals, and even to children, if they'd been washed, and didn't make too much noise. All in all, she didn't deserve what was about to happen to her, which was the fate Mother Nature had in store for any woman in this room on this night who happened to have approximately the same measurements as Granny Weatherwax. She was aware of someone coming up behind her.
"'Excuse me, missus?'
It turned out to be a small, repulsive, lower-class woman with a big, ingratiating smile.
"'What do you want, old woman?' said Lady Valentia. "'Excuse me,' said Nanny Ogg. "'My friend over there would like a word with you.'
Lady Valentia looked around haughtily into icy, blue-eyed, hypnotic oblivion.
"'What's this thing like an extra bump, hobo?'
"'It's a bustle, Esme.'
"'It's damn uncomfortable, is what it is. "'I keep on feeling someone's following me around.
"'The white suits you, anyway.'
"'Granny donned her mask. "'It was an eagle's face in white feathers stuck with sequins. "'Nanny adjusted some unmentionable underpinning "'somewhere beneath her crinoline and straightened up.
"'Caw, look at us,' she said. "'Them feathers in your hair really look good.'
"'I've never been vain,' said Granny Weatherwax. "'You know that, Githa.' No one could ever call me vain.
No, Esme, said Nanny Ogg.
Granny twirled a bit.
Are you ready then, Dame Ogg? She said.
Yes, let's do it, Lady Weatherwax.
The dance floor was thronged. Decorations hung from every pillar, but they were black and silver, the colours of the festival of Samedi Nuit Mor. An orchestra was playing on a balcony. Dancers twirled. The din was immense. A waiter with a tray of drinks suddenly found that he was a waiter without a tray of drinks. He looked around, and then down to a small fox under a huge white wig.
"'Bugger off and get us some more,' said Nanny pleasantly. "'Can you see her, your ladyship?'
"'There's too many people.'
"'Well, can you see the duck?'
"'How do I know? Everyone's got masks on.'
"'Hey, is that food over there?'
Many of the less energetic or more hungry of the genuine nobility were clustered around the long buffet. All they were aware of, apart from sharp digs with a pair of industrious elbows, was an amiable monotone at chest height, on the lines of, "'Mind your backs, stand aside there, coming through.' Nanny fought her way to the table and nudged a space for Granny Weatherwax.
"'Caw, what a spread, eh?' she said. "'Mind you, they have tiny chickens in these parts.'
She grabbed a plate.
"'I'll have three. Here, Charlie Chun.'
A flunky stared at her. "'Got any pickles?'
"'I'm afraid not, ma'am.'
Nanny Ogg looked along a table which included roast swans, a roasted peacock that probably wouldn't have felt any better about it even if it had known that its tail feathers were going to be stuck back in afterwards, and more fruits, boiled lobsters, nuts, cakes, creams and trifles than a hermit's dream.
"'Well, got any relish?'
"'No, ma'am.'
"'Tomato ketchup?'
"'No, ma'am.'
"'And they call this a gourmet paradise,' muttered Nanny, as the band struck up the next dance.
She nudged a tall figure, helping himself to the lobster.
"'Some place, eh?'
"'Very nice.
Good mask you've got there.'
"'Thank you.'
Nanny was spun around by Granny Weatherwax's hand on her shoulder.
"'There's Magrat,'
Where? Where?
Said Nanny. Over there, sitting by the potted plants.
Oh, yes, on the chassis longue,
said Nanny. That's sofa in foreign, you know, she added.
What's she doing?
Being attractive to men, I think.
What? Magrat?
Yeah, you're really getting good at that hypnotism, ain't you?
Magrat fluttered her fan and looked up at the Comte de Yo-Yo.
"La, sir," she said, "you may get me another plate of lark's eggs, if you really must."
"Like a shot, dear lady."
The old man bustled off in the direction of the buffet. Magrat extended her languorous hand towards Captain de Vere of the Palace Guard. He stood to attention.
"Dear Captain," she said, "you may have the pleasure of the next dance."
"Acting like a hussy,"
said Granny disapprovingly. Nanny gave her an odd look.
"Not really," she said.
"Anyway, a bit of hussing never did anyone any harm. At least none of those men looked like the Duke.
Here, what you doing?"
This was to a small, bald-headed man who was trying surreptitiously to set up a small easel in front of them.
If you ladies could just hold still for a few minutes, he said shyly, for the woodcut.
What woodcut? Said Granny Weatherwax.
You know, said the man, opening a small penknife. Everyone likes to see their woodcut in the broadsheets after a ball like this. Lady Thing enjoying a joke with Lord What's-It, that sort of thing.
Granny Weatherwax opened her mouth to reply, but Nanny Ogg laid a gentle hand on her arm. She relaxed a little and sought for something more suitable to say.
I knows a joke about alligator sandwiches, she volunteered, and shook Nanny's hand away. There was a man, and he went into an inn, and he said, do you sell alligator sandwiches? And the other man said, yes, and he said, then give me an alligator sandwich, and don't be a long time about it.
She gave a triumphant look.
Yes,
said the woodcutter, chipping away quickly.
And then what happened?
Nanny Ogg dragged Granny away quickly, searching for a distraction.
Some people don't know a joke when they hear it, said Granny.
As the band launched into another number, Nanny Ogg fumbled in a pocket and found the dance card that belonged to an owner now slumbering peacefully in a distant room.
Sir Roger the Coverley?
Ma'am?
Granny Weatherwax looked around. A plump military man with big whiskers was bowing to her. He looked as though he'd enjoyed quite a few jokes in his time.
Yes? You promised me the honour of this dance, milady?
No, I didn't.
The man looked puzzled. But I assure you, Lady de Rangement, your card. My name is Colonel Moutard.
Granny gave him a look of deep suspicion, and then read the dance card attached to her fan.
How?
Do you know how to dance?
Hissed Nanny.
Of course.
Never seen you dance, said Nanny.
Granny Weatherwax had been on the point of giving the Colonel as polite a refusal as she could manage. Now she threw back her shoulders defiantly.
A witch can do anything she puts her mind to, Githa Ogg. Come, Mr. Colonel.
Nanny watched as the pair disappeared into the throng.
Hello, foxy lady,
said a voice behind her. She looked around. There was no one there.
Down here.
She looked down. A very small body, wearing the uniform of a captain in the palace guard, a powdered wig, and an ingratiating smile, beamed up at her.
My name's Casananda, he said. I'm reputed to be the world's greatest lover. What do you think?
Nanny Ogg looked him up and down, or at least down and further down.
You're a dwarf, she said. Size isn't important.
Nanny Ogg considered her position. One colleague, known for her shy and retiring nature, was currently acting like what's-her-name, the heathen queen who was always playing up to men very odd and dancing with a man, even though she didn't know one foot from the other. Nanny Ogg felt she was at least owed a bit of time in which to be her own woman.
Can you dance as well? She said wearily.
Oh, yes. How about a date?
How old do you think I am? Said Nanny.
Casananda considered.
All right, then, he said. How about a prune?
Nanny sighed and reached down for his hand.
Come on.
Lady Valentia d'Arrangement staggered limply along a passageway, a forlorn thin shape in complicated corsetry and ankle-length underwear. She wasn't at all sure what had happened. There had been that frightful woman, and then this feeling of absolute bliss, and then she'd been sitting on the carpet with her dress off. Lady Valentia had been to enough balls in her dull life to know that there were occasions when you woke up in strange rooms with your dress off, but that tended to be later in the evening, and at least you had some idea of why you were there. She eased her way along, holding on to the wall. Someone was definitely going to get told off about this. A figure came around a bend in the corner, idly tossing a turkey leg into the air with one hand and catching it with the other.
"I say," said Lady Valentia, "I wonder if you would be so good as to..."
Oh. She looked up at a leather-clad figure with an eye patch and a grin like a Corsair raider.
Oh, I say.
Nothing to this dancing, Granny Weatherwax told herself. It's just moving around to music. It helps to be able to read her partner's mind. Dancing is instinctive after you've got past that stage of looking down to see what your feet are doing. He soon gave in, partly in the face of Granny Weatherwax's sheer refusal to compromise, but mainly because of her boots. Lady d'Arrangement's shoes hadn't fitted. Besides, Granny was attached to her boots. They had complicated iron fixtures and toe caps like battering rams. When it came to dancing, Granny's boots went exactly wherever they wanted to go. She steered her helpless and slightly crippled partner towards Nanny Ogg, who had already cleared quite a space around her. What Granny could achieve with 2 pounds of hobnailed syncopation, Nanny Ogg could achieve merely with her bosom. It was a large and experienced bosom, and not one that was subject to restraint. As Nanny Ogg bounced down, it went up. When she gyrated right, it hadn't finished twirling left. In addition, Nanny's feet moved in a complicated jig step regardless of the actual tempo, so that while her body actually progressed at the speed of a waltz, her feet were doing something a bit nearer to a hornpipe. The total effect obliged her partner to dance several feet away, and many surrounding couples to stop dancing just to watch in fascination, in case the build-up of harmonic vibrations dropped her into the chandeliers. Granny and her helpless partner whirled past.
"Stop showing off,"
Granny hissed, and disappeared into the throng again.
"Who's your friend?" said Casananda.
"She's..."
Nanny began. There was a blast of trumpets.
"That was a bit off the beat," she said. "No, that means the Duke is arriving," said Casananda.
The band stopped playing. The couples, as one, turned and faced the main staircase. There were two figures descending in stately fashion.
"My word, he's a sleek and handsome devil," Nanny told herself. "It just goes to show, Esme's right. You can never tell by looking. And her... that's Lily Weatherwax?"
The woman wasn't masked. Give or take the odd laughter line and wrinkle, it was Granny Weatherwax to the life. Nanny found she was turning to find the white eagle head in the crowd. All heads were turned to the staircase, but there was one staring as if her gaze was a steel rod. Lily Weatherwax wore white. Until that point, it had never occurred to Nanny Ogg that there could be different colours of white. Now she knew better. The white of Lily Weatherwax's dress seemed to radiate. If all the lights went out, she felt, Lily's dress would glow. It had style, it gleamed, and puffed sleeves, and was edged with lace. And Lily Weatherwax looked, Nanny Ogg had to admit it, younger. There was the same bone structure and fine Weatherwax complexion, but it looked less worn.
"If that's what being bad does to you," Nanny thought, "I could have done with some of that years ago. The wages of sin is death, but so is the salary of virtue, and at least the evil get to go home early on Fridays."
The eyes were the same, though. Somewhere in the genetics of the Weatherwaxes was a piece of sapphire, maybe generations of them. The Duke was unbelievably handsome, but that was understandable. He was wearing black. Even his eyes wore black. Nanny surfaced and pushed her way through the throng to Granny Weatherwax.
"Esme?"
She grabbed Granny's arm.
"Esme?"
"Hmm?"
Nanny was aware that the crowd was moving, parting like a sea between the staircase and the chaise longue at the far end of the hall. Granny Weatherwax's knuckles were as white as her dress.
"Esme, what's happening? What are you doing?"
said Nanny.
"Trying to stop the story," said Granny. What's she doing, then?
Letting things happen.
The crowd were pulling back past them. It didn't seem to be a conscious thing. It was just happening that a sort of corridor was forming. Magrat stood up. Nanny was aware of a rainbow hue in the air. Possibly there was a tweeting of bluebirds. The prince took Magrat by the hand. Nanny glanced up at Lily Weatherwax, who had remained a few steps up from the foot of the stairs and was smiling beneficently. Then she tried to put a focus on the future. It was horribly easy. Normally, the future is branching off at every turn, and it's only possible to have the haziest idea of what is likely to happen, even when you're as temporally sensitive as a witch. But here there were stories coiled around the tree of events, bending it into a new shape.